the DL debate broadcast this evening from 7 p.m. Its host is Brendan Devaney, and he joins us on the show again. Good Monday morning to you, Bren. How are you getting on?
The very best, Greg. Yeah, fresh. Yourself, I hear you're out doing 5K runs.
That was nonsense in my head. That's the only place I ran. I have a pair of runners in the boot of the car, which I got for running. I have them about a year. I've never put them on, but I'm going to change. This is it. I'm now heading into the winter, Brendan. I'm going to do something. I don't know what it is.
What about that Wim Hof guy with the breathing? You could do that even in the morning, you know. Come on, really pumped up.
I don't know. I want to do something really that tightens my stomach.
Don't eat as much.
Is it that easy?
Well, I remember being in the gym years ago, and there was an older guy in there, and he was in great shape. I'm always looking for advice off people, you know. So I was on about doing sit-ups and getting the core and all that. He said to me, abs are made in the kitchen, my friend.
I like it.
I'll never forget that.
Right, so takeaways, I have to stop that, do I?
Bread. Well, listen, you never go too hard, Greg.
Is there an alternative to white bread? It's so bloody delicious, Brendan. I remember speaking to you years ago, and you were on some sort of a mixed bread or something. Do you still, what do you eat bread?
I'm on the gluten-free, to be honest, Greg. I try just take a wee bit of bread. 100% wholemeal if you have to eat the ordinary pan, 100%. It's the best thing your body can deal with. I wouldn't be eating anything else, but listen, that's just me.
Do you run at all now, or?
Yeah, I do a bit of training still. Not
I know you're training in the gym and all, but I was just wondering, is it mainly weights and stuff, or do you do running or treadmill or anything like that?
A bit of swimming. I think now, Greg, the main thing is to stay kind of loose, you know, stay a wee bit flexible. You know, as time goes on, I think that's the big thing. I sit a lot when I'm driving and up in my job, so you're always trying to stretch out and open up. I think as long as you kind of feel good about energy, I think that's
well. I was feeling good, but I was eventually, after years of being afraid to go, went to the doctor, got the ECG, got the blood pressure and all that kind of stuff. And I thought I was doing really well, and I sort of glanced down at my midsection and, I sucked it in a little bit. And he says, you're going to have to do something like that, son.
Yeah. Well, listen, I think there's wee ways there to kind of cheat the snacking and just, loads of wee ways there. We out here to kind of stop them. Munching and late-night toasties.
See, I am about what my weight for my height, right? It's not the eating. I think really I need up the exercise. Do you know what I'm saying? Like, I don't eat too much, but I have a very sedentary, I think it's called, lifestyle. I need to get off the couch. I think my eating's okay, but I just need to actually start burning some stuff.
Well, I think more, Greg, the exercise more better for your body generally, for your head, you know, for your brain. There's definitely a great response to the body, even outside that. I would say most of that comes down to diet, you know. It's very hard to train against to burn that amount of calories if you're not eating right. It's more about get the diet right. The training, Greg, would be more just for your general body healthiness and mood than that, I would think.
All right, okay. Well, thanks for that.
Is that me finished?
No, we have to. Well, that's not even why we invited you on. I'm sorry. I just thought whilst we're here, we shall have a chat. Right, you have Barry Meehan and Maureen O'Donnell on for a look back at the club championship at the weekend. Give us a rundown of the runners and riders and what sprout to you.
Maureen's on, obviously, talk about all the championships for the ladies. And once again, we have the powerhouses at our Terman and Glenn Finn in the final. So Dunan's given it their all at the weekend. They're trying to bridge the gap to these two giants of our game, Greg, but they came up short against Glenn Finn. A great second half. And Karen Guthrie, 2-4 as ever. Terman had a big one over St. Noel's. And I was just looking, that's five finals in a row when you have these two teams playing each other, Greg, and even going back in this last 9 years, it's been seven of the finals as these two teams. So they're really dominating ladies' club football. They're two brilliant teams, and it's going to be another fascinating final. We're up to the intermediate finals as well, and the juniors as well. So a lot happening with the ladies' football. So it'll be good to talk to Mo as well. And then Barry's going to give us a run across we had a relegation playoff here. Kelly Begg survived in the senior championship for another year. They beat St. Noel's, their neighbours at the weekend. So St. Noel's now will play the losers of Milford and St. Michael's. We had an interesting one in the Junior A Championship Greg, you have a couple of teams going to the semi-final atop the group, and then because of the nature of the teams and that, the numbers, there's like a pre-quarter-final game there, or pre-semi-final game. But the St. Narasa and Niamh Connell C team, which is basically their second team, they topped the, they were both top in the group, and the final game, the game previous to this, Niamh Connell were to play Horace. Norris didn't field. So who was going to top the group? Greg, come down then to say head-to-head, and we drew. And then, of course, because Horace didn't field, you couldn't go to the score difference because there was no such thing. So they, interestingly, then had to play a playoff game, which Narasa beat. They've called by a
close
point.
One.
Two points to the last point, minute. Yeah. So it was a very strange situation to happen that you would need a playoff game. So it's Niamh Alton are playing Niamh Patrick Muffin, and Niamh Connell now playing Mobile to get into that semi-final where Convoy and Narasa are waiting. So plenty to discuss in there with Barry Meehan.
And I love the fact that there's a show now that does that right across the... right across the spectrum of the sport as well. It gets people on knowing what they're talking about and talks about the ins and outs of it too, which I think is fantastic. And it's what the fans want as well. You also have 92 legend Tony Boyle on. Not, you know, one of the most heard voices of the 92 crew, if I phrase that correctly.
Yeah, absolute legend of a man. I can't speak highly of him, and anybody knows him says the same. What a guy, you know, hero of mine, Greg. I was actually joking with him at the start of the interview because in 1992, obviously, I was a wee lad up in the Canal End there cheering on Donegal. And then, what was it, 5 years later, myself and Tony were the full forward line for Donegal. I probably never thought that would happen then, but it did. But outside of that, legend of a man, I got this interview after the Dunlow Gidor game. Myself and Tony and the gang of Dunlow boys were in the Bridge Bar, and then we got a couple of words, which was good crack. We had a great evening down there in Dunlow. So listen, always great to talk to Tony. His huge involvement, obviously, his five daughters, and they're all playing Gaelic. They're all brilliant players, just like himself. So they're all involved in Dunlow and up through county sides and that. So just caught up with him, and we shot the breeze out in the smoking area there.
And there's not many sports whereby you can be standing in the stalls or standing in the crowd 1 year and then a few short years later shoulder to shoulder with your sporting hero. It's an amazing stuff. So that interview with Tony Boyle, reflection on the men's and women's championship games from the weekend. So that's Barry Meehan, Maureen O'Donnell and Tony Boyle. It's all live just after the 7 p.m. news this evening on Highland Radio. Go ahead, Brent.
Yeah, and minors, just Greg, as well, I have to mention the minors, of course. You're four masters, right?
Yeah, well, no, Niamh Breach, sorry. What? That's actually Niamh Breach, kind
right?
of...
Okay, I wasn't too excited. We've never had this conversation. How come we've never had this conversation?
Are you starting something? Because I will go.
Literally, four masters are flying and on the raids. And again, they're in the final. Them at Buncrana, where masters being good or Buncrana beating St. Unions, and in the Division 2 men of Clonhilly playing Niamh Patrick Muff. So, listen, great things happening. Good to see Buncrana as well there. You know, it's second biggest county, second biggest town in Donegal. We want to see them always progressing, of course, there. So good to see their minors doing well again. For masters, after falling maybe off the top tier of seniors, certainly building a load of great young footballers again in another minor final for them coming up.
Fantastic stuff, Brendan. Listen, thanks so very much. Looking forward to it. Have a lovely day. And Brendan will be with you live after the 7 p.m. news tonight. You can listen to the DL debate in association with Sarah's Kitchen at Sister Sarah's Letterkenny. And that's if you want to listen to it live. It is going to be available shortly after broadcast as a podcast for you to listen when you're out in your run or whatever it might be. Hi, Greg. Could you please play a request for Gemma Wiley, who has said yes to the dress from her mum and Auntie Amanda. Whoop, whoop, they say. I know Gemma. I thought she said yes to the dress a long time ago. I don't know what that means. What does that mean, yes to the dress? Anyway, congratulations. Hi there, Greg. My daughter and two of her friends went along to the Mount Errigal on Saturday night to see the Tumbling Paddies. Enjoyed the night, but were charged $22.50 for three Coke soft drinks. Seems a bit extortionate, but did anyone else at the concert feel it was too expensive? $22.50 for three Cokes. So what does that make them? Over €7 each? No mixer in there at all? I don't know. We'll check into that. Good morning, Greg. I think Patrick Kielty was just okay as a host, apart from when he tried to sound like Gay Byrne, which was as cringy as trying to make a joke to get the big elephant out of your TV screens. It's time the Late Late was axed as nothing like what it was. Let Patrick stay as host, but change the name of the show and wipe out a show that doesn't work anymore. Okay, so I think first show, a lot of nerves. I think they really need to, I think, actually, I guessed at least one of the guests that was going to be on the show. The public no longer want to hear RTE employees being interviewed, okay? We have too small a country here. There's 5 or 6 million people on the island of Ireland, and we've heard most of the stories before. As I say, why not cover social issues, cultural issues, get a debate going? I think, or maybe people feel that that's being done now by prime time and late debate or whatever shows else shows might be on. I don't know, because I don't watch RTE, but I did watch on Friday night. So I don't know. It just can't. It's not going to last beyond this season doing what they did on Friday. Patrick, I thought, did really well. A lot of nerves, a lot of pride. I love the Gay Byrne reference, to be honest with you. And I'm in a bit of a cynical old git. But he is going to struggle if they just wheel out the same guests. Another podcast next week, some other Instagram, Lottie Ryan. Do you know what I mean? They're going to have to come up with something else, unless they just say that this is a platform for us to promote other RTE shows. If they say that, that's fine. It'll die or succeed on that. Could you get some of the politicians to come on and explain when can we get approval from Donegal County Council on our Craig Connaught applications? I'm not sure, not familiar with that. I'll check it in. If the cycle lanes were built to the same standard as the roads, then cyclists would use them, as they are full of road debris with ramps on every junction when the cyclist has to yield to every adjoining minor road. But then again, too, would you want to share them with people walking, running, pushing buggies? That's also a problem that comes up. People say, well, I'm doing 40 kilometres per hour down mountaintop or in the four lanes, 40 kilometres per hour. I don't want to clean someone out of it on the cycle lane. I just think you'll see scooters on them and people out for a casual cycle. Those cycle lanes are not going to be used routinely by semi-pro cycle, not semi-pro. You know what I'm on about? Dressed up like they're doing the Tour de France. The new lanes going into Letterkenny are way too narrow. There was no need for the cycle lane to be that wide. Not much space between a van and a lorry or a bus, but whoever designed that needs to go back and have a good look at it. I think they're narrowed on purpose. We have seen that with other road developments. I think it's actually to slow traffic down. I don't think it's it's not a lack of space. It's to slow traffic down, I believe. Now, someone who's involved in roads engineering, I'm sure, will advise me one way or other. But they did the same out at Capri and Ballybuffet and other road developments. People go, oh, it's too wide, you can barely pass. It's by design. It's so that you slow down and keep other road users safe. I'm not saying that's the right thing to do. I'm just saying, as far as I understand, that is why it is done like that. And our next guest is in studio, and it's Caroline O'Hara, who's one of the founders of Destined, which is designed to empower people with learning disabilities and promote social inclusion. Good morning to you. Thank you so much for calling up.
Good morning, Greg. How are you?
It's great to have you with us. Okay, now we are speaking ahead of a conference that's taking place in Claudia, which we'll talk about anon. But talk to me a little bit more about Destined. What is the work behind the title?
Well, we set up Destined 22 odd years ago. And basically it was for people really that had left maybe school and were sitting at home doing nothing. People with learning disabilities, people maybe just with maybe mental health issues or people with autism. And when we set it up, we were really looking at how we could help empower them and give them opportunities to maybe have a more fulfilled life.
Because there probably wasn't an obvious pathway between school leaving and then entering the workforce or any organisation for that matter. There was like a buffer zone there almost.
Yeah. Many of our members would have maybe attended either special schools or gone to secondary schools, maybe didn't have any qualifications when they left school. And really going into even, now there would have been, the Northwest College in Derry would have had a course that they could have taken people into. But a lot of the people that were coming to us were people with maybe autism and learning disabilities that couldn't cope with very large spaces and very large numbers. And they just needed maybe more individualised programmes and activities as well. So we started off very small. Say this is our 22nd year. We have another centre that's 12 years old now that we opened in Feeney, which is in County Derry, because we were very aware of the experiences of people that were living in isolated rural communities as well. Our youngest members now are coming in really shortly after birth, maybe for children with diagnosis of cerebral palsy or maybe Down syndrome, something that can be seen. And our oldest members are in their early 80s. Mm.
Do you think that we need to be doing more to address some of these issues, you know, through education or with the people at that period of time? You know, I mean, rather than have this sort of a cliff edge that Destined is in there and people like you are there to support, but could we not be doing more through that process to help in that regard?
Interestingly say that, Greg. I am a parent of a young woman now. She's 42, who has a learning disability and who has autism and has a bit of cerebral palsy as well. And basically, whenever she was younger, I realised the services weren't there. Mm. And I actually went back and trained as a teacher. And I started working in special schools and developed provision for autism in the special school that I was teaching in Derry. And then after a number of years, the inspectorate approached my principal to ask, would I maybe look at developing services for mainstream schools, because there was nothing in mainstream schools at that stage either. And basically, about 25 years ago, I set up the autism service for Derry, Tyrone and Fermanagh, which was amazing. Part of the Western Education Library Board.
So your work you were doing was being recognised to the point where they said, we need to see if we can employ this elsewhere.
Yes. Basically, a lot of people were coming looking at the model I developed. But I think because I probably, I was going to say, was straddling sort of riding two horses almost, that because I was a parent and a carer, and also because I was an educationalist, I could see where a lot of the gaps were. Mm-hmm. And basically, as I say, we were looking at other difficulties that were out there as well. But specifically, through work, it was autism. But say my daughter also learned disabilities and physical disabilities. So we were aware even of all the issues and problems that families are meeting all the time. We talk about learning disability and autism as being lifelong conditions. And basically, I suppose, we talk about it from, say, birth to death. Starting off even, now I was listening to your programme, I think it was last week, mm-hmm. and they were talking about the services in North Donegal. And I was thinking, nothing really has changed. And this is where we're at times, that parents of younger children now that are maybe going through assessment, that are going through diagnosis, that maybe have autism or learning disabilities, basically are still knocking on doors. And your guest last week, I didn't catch his name now because I was driving at the time.
Yeah. Leonard, probably.
Leonard, yeah. And when Leonard was talking, he was talking about the fact that, you know, parents are maybe all knocking on doors as individuals, and they're being appeased or they're being sort of sidestepped and things to work with them. And he says it needs to be maybe a more concerted approach.
Yeah.
So when our daughter left special school and we realised there was nothing really that could have been done for her that was sort of set up and established, we then said, right, we need to look at something. Mm-hmm. But my husband and I both have skill sets that we're able to do things. So I'm still working. But say we set up Destined and we said, rather than just help her, we should be helping other people out there as well. So that was why it was set up. And now when we opened the doors, there were people that were coming that had actually were 10 years older than her, that had been to the special school, that remembered her as a little girl. And they were saying, oh, I remember you from the school bus and things. Now, we have a very wide range of abilities and disabilities within Destined as well.
It just sounds to me like something that requires, you know, so much work and so many skill sets. because people are different and it has to adapt and be able to sort of, accommodate everybody. So when you talk about from a very young age, if someone comes to you at five or something like that, so how does Destined work with them through their schooling and past that and into working life, for an example? Like, what kind of involvement might you have?
I suppose it's going to say it's interesting because, again, now I've retired. I retired as a teacher 5 years ago and came in then full time to help out with Destined. And basically, I suppose a five-year-old, we're looking at maybe just first of all where the family lives.
Yeah.
A lot of the children that are first identified coming to us are attending special schools. So we have developed links with the special schools. Our area covers Lima Valley up as far as Strabane and into Derry. And again, just through, let's say, my experience of being involved with all the schools, primary, post-primary, nursery, special, people know they can lift the phone and contact us. And maybe then, we'd say maybe we need to sort of meet with families or families would like to get in touch. And we explore really what each family's journey is and what their journey is for their child to see how we can help them. We have an after schools program, which is based in Clawdy, which is where the conference is going to be, this conference anyway. And then we do programs with the schools. So, for example, we talk about inclusion. And it's not just about people with learning disabilities and autism being brought out and being involved with society. It's actually about, it's a two-way process about people in society coming in and being involved with Destined too and things. So, for example, just after COVID, we've the Railway Museum in Derry, and I'm training up our tour guides to be, or some of our members to be tour guides. So we were looking at developing an interpretive centre and looking at exhibitions. So we involved the primary and the secondary and special schools, and we had workshops, and the kids came in and the students came in and got involved with it. And basically we look at the whole social aspect of things. Some of our members, for example, we have a football team. So again, if you're a younger child that's maybe interested in football, we have a Derry City Supporters Club. Not Van Harps, unfortunately, but
hey,
we're based in Derry.
Where it might go.
You know what I mean? it's only because we're based in Derry.
Of course.
We also do drama, we do music. We actually, for our members now that are looking to be more independent, we look at life skills, we look at sport, as I say. One of our members is a black belt now in judo. And has actually become a referee in judo. So, there's...
So I'd imagine, Destin, it must be really useful for families that it's an understanding that gets it, a voice that can signpost or can offer certain services that are available, because loneliness is something that you hear an awful lot of people. Also, too, just in terms of the different groups that work in this area, do you think... either just within Derry or on a cross-border basis, there's enough coordination between the various groups that are doing fantastic work in different areas, but potentially under the same sort of under the same roof, that maybe a little bit more coordination or whatever might be helpful, and if so, how?
Yeah, well, I suppose that's one of the aims of this conference. For example, we work very closely with Blue Stack, who are based down Donegal Town, and other groups within, say, Derry and County Derry. But at the same time, we want to look at maybe developing, through a partnership approach, having a cohesive strategy. And from it then, and that's to support not just the person with the autism learning disability, but their families as well, because it has to be sort of a wraparound approach to it. And then from that, and from the conference then, we want to maybe identify then, have a roadmap that we can identify the resources that are necessary, and then look at even future planning. So it's not just about now. For example, they're building the two special schools in Derry were amalgamated about 6 or 7 years ago. And both schools, one of them definitely wasn't fit for purpose. So they're building a new school. And we've just heard unofficially that there's going to be a problem because it isn't big enough. to take all the students that are at the school. So future planning has to come into it. And again, even sort of looking at lobbying and things and getting the groups together. So that's kind of what we want everybody to come. And I mean, everybody's welcome.
Of course. To the conference. Like, what we need, though, is we need the powers that be, the well-resourced powers that be it the NHS or the HSC or whatever, to catch up with works the likes Destin's doing, that iCare's doing, that the Bluestack Foundation are doing, as you mentioned. All of these organisations that are working so hard to plug gaps really that shouldn't actually be there. The state should be providing an awful lot of this. But we have a tendency to just throw money at things. You know, we don't want that. We need people to understand the problems in terms of, you know, supports for children, speech and language and all that kind of stuff. We've kind of, over the course of the last 3 weeks, been discussing this, Caroline. We've kind of pretty much figured out what the problem is.
Yeah.
If you know what I mean.
Yeah.
Now, what we need is the people that make these decisions to recognise that the parents know best and to sort of start addressing it. And that can supplement and complement and be referred from the kind of works Destin do and the other groups that we're talking of.
Well, we would work very closely with the statutory services that is. And we would work again with...
Are they responsive? This is in Northern Ireland. Are they responsive?
To a certain degree, but again, I'm going to say their hands are tied and things because, now this is what I've discovered, I worked in the statutory sector and now I've moved into the voluntary sector, and I just know that through the statutory sector, you know, your hands are tied a lot of the time and you have to pass requests up the line and things and it has to be discussed and the processes and everything else. And again, we don't have a government in the north at the moment, so it doesn't really matter whose door we're knocking on at the moment. We've got recession, we've got inflation, we've got all kinds of problems out there, but we don't even have a door to knock on to look for money or whatever. But we're saying to people, let's get together, let's identify what the issues are and then look at how we work together. Now, we're very lucky in Derry that it's like Letterkenny, really. It's quite small and everybody knows Derry or knows each other, and we can lift the phone and talk to other groups as well. But I think sitting down together within a room and looking at partnership working and then seeing how we can lobby together to make things improve.
A voice that can't be ignored. So this all kind of brings us right back to the conference then. So talk to us about the conference, what it's about, who's invited, when and where.
Right. The conference is in the Diamond Centre in Clody, and it's on Wednesday morning. It's starting at 10 o'clock and it's in the mornings just until 12. But we're going to have invited speakers. We've people with learning disability speaking. We've people with autism speaking. We have family members speaking. We have, we're doing presentations from professionals as well that will look at, I'm going to say, the services that are there already, so we can identify them maybe where the gaps are. And then we're going to have an invited speaker who's going to talk about the benefits of partnership working and her experiences of that and how that brings people for a cohesive lobbying campaign then to work together. And I say everybody's very welcome. We've invited students at schools and colleges maybe that are doing health and social care. We would have student placements coming in from McGee that maybe are doing nursing or OT and things. And again, they're coming in and they're familiar with our members and things. So really what we're saying is it's an open door. We'd be very welcome to see everybody. And I suppose we're lucky in a way that we've got good relationships with Derry City and Strabane District Council, who provided the funding for it. And I suppose another thing I want to do is do a quick shout out, if you don't mind as well, Greg. We actually, as they have the museum, and we have a culture night on Friday night, and it's open to the public from 7 to 9, and there's no admission charges. And again, as they, some of our tour guides are members of Destin to Learn Disabilities, and we'd love to see people along at it as well.
Okay. And in terms of the conference, I think through the course of this conversation, people will know whether it's for them or not, because they'll say, right, well, that's the area I'm in, or that's the area I have an interest in. Okay, continued success with Destined and success with the with the conference, which is on 10 a.m. Wednesday in the Diamond Centre, Claudie. Thanks very much, Caroline. I really appreciate it. Okay, that's Caroline O'Hara, one of the founders of Destined. All right, thanks for your comments as they're coming in this morning. I will get to them before 12, for as many of them as I can. Thanks very much. Keep them coming, 0866 25000 or call us on 0749 125000. Okay, right. Pretty much effectively, we are going to see a new political party. And it is going to be the 100% Redress Party. And its public relations officer, its PRO, is Ali Farron. Ali, thank you so much for your time today. Really do appreciate it.
Yeah. How are you, Rob?
I am good. So where are you now in terms of having this officially recognised as a party on a national scale?
We are probably 15 days or 16 days away from getting the rubber stamp. The Register of Political Parties have basically said that they intend to accept our application pending a 21-day review in case some of the other political parties would like to knock us off the perch before we even get started. But overall, we've complied with all the regulations that they need, and we'll be good to go.
Yeah, indeed. And it's unlikely any parties might do that because there's no advantage to them in doing so. So once that's done, and let's presume that it will be done, does the work start then in terms of, you know, recruiting people to run for elections? Obviously, a party requires a team that will never seek public office, that have to work behind the scenes. Or is that work tentatively already been underway, Ali?
There's a lot done, but to quote another political party, a lot more to do. So we have a lot of the paperwork type done, and when we get approval now, we will be setting up the bank account. You need money to run an election, so we'll be setting up the bank account, and then we'll be looking for membership people to come on board. Then we'll be looking to set up small commons, for want of a better word, in different electoral areas. So a lot more to do, Greg, definitely. Mm. But look, we've over the first hurdle. This is a marathon. So there's going to be a lot of hurdles we're going to jump through. And our priority is getting a party formed and then get our candidates in the race, get them togged out, ready for the race.
This the 100% Redress Party has been labelled as a single issue party. Is that the case?
We don't think so. Of course, it's going to have a massive emphasis on the redress of the houses, the defective concrete blocks. But there's you don't need to be a genius in Donegal or right down the West Coast to see that there's lots of things that needs to be redressed in different areas. And depending on the first elections we will be doing will be county council elections. So, you know, there's no point in having a massive memorandum or a bit policy on the health and education, because they're not relative to county council elections. And again, we are from grassroots, like we're new, but it'll be a meeting of minds. There'll be a pile of people in rooms that will want different things, and we will be fighting on all fronts when possible. Yeah. But the main aim of our, like there's three or four parties been around since the start of this state. They haven't delivered for Donegal or they haven't delivered for defective concrete blocks. So that's the reason why we're putting this party in place.
I mean, they might argue that, look, this is a national scheme, that councillors have attended numerous meetings on defective concrete. You've got many friends within the council that raise it at every given opportunity. And then we know, to some extent, the executive's hands are tied up with bureaucracy and have to interact with the housing department. You know, what change at council level can 100% Redress Party electees make?
Right, well, the first and foremost, there's nobody in the council at the moment, while they say they are doing their job for us. The defective concrete block homeowner business owner, farmer, does not have anybody that they can say 100% is speaking for them. They don't, and at the moment, we don't have a mandate to be at that table to, you know. And while we know the scheme that was delivered by the government to the council to deliver is not fit for purpose at the moment, if we can get a mandate from the people, the powers that be in Dublin then has to take us more seriously because we have a mandate. Like, we are we will be a democratic party. It's a democratic country, and it's only right that they accept and respect what democratic candidates have.
You have some councillors in your own area, and when I say that, I mean generally in a show, that are, you know, very active and have been very supportive of the campaign. You can't rule out displacing them. Are they collateral damage? If that happens, so be it.
Well, you know, everybody who goes to the polling booth has a choice to make, and they can decide, did them people work, you know. All right, some of them are high profile, but, you know, a fine example was a few weeks ago or months ago, they were asked to go to represent, all the politicians were asked to go to Dublin to represent us. You probably remember how many didn't go. You know, so, like, this is a disaster waiting to happen. And the amount of houses that's in this area and all over Donegal that probably won't be fixed in my lifetime at this stage.
No.
People see no, you know, people do not see an end to this handling. And
I think there's a really strong point here, and I'll have to in future conversations choose my words more carefully, because you know, I have to interview you guys and I have to interview Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael, but there's a voice out there that's not heard as much perhaps it should be of people, and a lot of them, and I'm not sure if the majority, that have no hope at all, that they don't believe they can't. An example, if I had a house, and who's to say I may not, and I had to get €40,000 together, and some people are having to get much more than that together to access this scheme, I don't know how I would do that. You know, and there's people an awful lot worse off than I am. And also, too, as you get older, I'm still paying a mortgage, but, you know, you'd be looking at paying something into well into your 70s and 80s. A lot of people don't want to do that. And I'm not sure if they're not the majority. I think they might actually be the majority of people affected by this crisis, not to mention those that are in public social housing who see no hope at all. I think that is the majority of people out there, that they still feel completely helpless, even with this scheme in place.
Well, one thing we will soon find out at the next county council election, we will be running councillors exactly to support people, or to make a better case for people like me and other people who are, you know, you're right. There's a lot of people here who don't see the end of the tunnel. You know, they just can't get their head around this scheme. There's while there is help, it's very little. Like, we have two facilitators in the whole of Donegal for thousands of people, for thousands of homes. We have elderly who can't see an end to it. You know, there's so much wrong. And some of the politicians that we have at the moment are nearly saying, well, we've done you, we've got you a deal. You know, like, this is the second one, and it's still not right. So, you know, and if they are collateral damage for us come the next election, well.
Now, I mean, it's one thing promising something, it's another thing delivering. You know, we have Sinn Féin saying they will just make this 100% redress, that there is just no doubt about that. It'll be funded, it'll be budgeted, they'll deliver justice to the people affected by this. They'll go after the banks, they'll go after the insurance companies. It'll all be done as soon as they are in power, and they may well be in power. I take it then that there might be a little bit of cynicism or scepticism, Ali, amongst those affected by this, that a Sinn Féin-led government will deliver as promised, and that you will actually still need people elected to fight this campaign, even if that were the government in place.
Yeah, I think so. I think we still need representation. Like, we've had all promises before, and fair enough, Sinn Féin's hasn't been tested yet. But our party, if we get an election, get elected and get a mandate, we will promise, one thing we will promise to try. And sometimes I think some of our politicians are not even trying. You know, we will put people in place, hopefully, that will be shrewd enough that can, you know, talk and, you know, do it in a way that we need help, and we need it now. And, you know, we can't leave it for another 4 or 5 years in the hope that if Sinn Féin gets in, that they will deliver. At the same time, we have no mandate to go knocking on a door and up at Dáil Éireann and say, you know. So our hope is that we get a mandate from the people of Donegal and right down the West Coast, should we get candidates in that area, and that we can open doors and help, you know, keep this topic on the, like, there's so much that needs to be done in this country, but, and maybe if some of the bigger, this new Sinn Féin gets in the next election, their priority, while they say it is, maybe it won't be in Donegal. So, like, it might be safer to have, you know, a card in your back pocket that you can pull out and say, well, you know.
It's going to make the council election debates in a few months very, very interesting. There's just no doubt about that. I'm looking forward to that already. It's a very serious matter, but of course it's just going to make those debates that we'll be hosting here on Highland really interesting, I think. Do you anticipate any defections? Do you anticipate any defections in any shown to the 100% redress party? Not looking for any names or anything, but if any feeler has been put out, any white smoke, do you expect, don't say you're open to it or we'll see or whatever, but do you expect any defections?
At the moment, I don't know. You know, people are probably, politicians, you know, they're a closed shop. They don't like the new kids on the block. They're going to kind of say, I think they're going to have to see that the public want change. They want a voice for, you know, defective concrete block owners. And some of them might decide, but some of them mightn't be a fit for us either. You know, they mightn't be what we want. We're a new party. We might want to be new faces. We might want to be new and fresh thinking, that we're not going to come down the line that, you know, Dublin or somebody else can say, no, you have to keep quiet this week. You can't say too much in case you annoy a Taoiseach or a Tánaiste somewhere up around Dublin. So I think we will be looking for fresh faces, young faces. We would love a few women to come on board, because the strength of the women that have been involved with the redress or the defective concrete block campaign has been phenomenal. And we will be looking for new or nearly new, how's that, basis going forward.
I think you've ruled yourself out already anyway with the young one. Come here.
I have a face for radio, not for posters.
Listen, come here. Thanks so much for that, Ali. I look forward to teasing out a bit more with you. So approval has been given. It's just paperwork now at this stage. And do you, once that paperwork lands on the door, do you have any bombshell announcements? In other words, where we can confirm this person is going to be a candidate?
It's still the same question, Greg, no matter what way you asked it. We do not have candidates yet.
That's it.
We will be getting our membership up, and it will be our membership who will be voting on who our next candidate or our candidates.
Ali, thanks for your time.
And before you cut me off, now that I have your attention, we have a Facebook page for the 100% Redress Party. If your listeners could check it out, give us a like, because it's through social media that we will be driving our election campaign. We will try and give Highland Radio a few pounds, but overall we'll be doing it mainly through social media.
Just give us interviews. You don't have to worry about the money. Thanks very much indeed. Take care of yourself. Ali Farron, 100% Redress Party. I'm sure there'll be some sort of an online package going into the elections, but as I say, we like to tease out on this programme and on the newsroom, tease out the issues by way of interviews as well. Is this just another left-wing anti-everything party? I don't really know what that is. I'm not sure if it's left or right-wing or how you might describe it. It's a party they say is designed to try and get 100% redress A caller says, Greg, what a wonderful woman Nuala Moore is. Congrats on the book. That comes in from Mary. Greg, I discovered I was pre-diabetic. I cut out all sugars and have lost 8 pounds in 4 weeks. Well done to you. I'm not looking forward to Christmas. I'm going to struggle not to have my quality street. Give it a go. I don't actually need to lose weight. I need to just get out and be a bit more active. A quick suggestion for Greg. What about an Operation Transformation section for the 9 till noon show? Healthy eating, exercise, even an evening walk? Well, you know what? If people are interested in that, get in touch with me. 086 60 25,000. We'll not be weighing anyone because I'd be dead against that. But certainly we can reflect on something if anyone out there wants to get involved with it. I'm always open to suggestions. That's what drives this show, of course. Right, okay. Thank you very much to Caroline Orr, who researched and produced the show, and Niamh Shields working flat out too behind the scenes. We appreciate their efforts. We appreciate you listening. We're back with you tomorrow morning at 9. Stay tuned. John Breslin's coming up around the Northwest after the news at 12.